Welcome in to a Thursday morning edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. If you're listening to this, I am on a plane to Orlando, but basketball goes on in the great state of New York. The Knicks fall 126-111 to the Philadelphia 76ers. The story of the night, Mitchell Robinson and his long-ass arms.
And then we're going to talk about the bench, who played so well. In addition to Mitchell Robinson, Alonzo Trier, Kadeem Allen, Damian Dotson all had standout games, so we'll get into them as well.
And we'll wrap up with some closing notes and your favorite segment until we start Fan Fridays, Overtime. That next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, count and one. Fisdale
pokes
his fist.
What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives.
Becomes infectious.
I thought I had a shot, and he just came up with his long-ass arms and blocked it.
Yeah, that just about sums it up. Welcome into Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf. What a game by Mitchell Robinson, and Joel Embiid certainly took notice. And it's the funniest thing, Alex, because about 2.5 quarters through this one, where I don't even think Robinson had scored yet. Maybe he had one bucket or like a couple of free throws. But I wrote down in my notes, like, and I was like, I was thinking we could make a whole segment out of this. I was like, okay, like, this is kind of the limits of Mitchell Robinson going up against a team that, at least on paper, one of the three or four most talented in all of basketball, going up against arguably the best center in the league in Joel Embiid. And we're finally kind of seeing the cracks. And I was like, okay, these are his limits so far. And that's not a bad thing. Like, there isn't a second rounder in existence that's going to like hold his own against Embiid. And then he just rips off this incredible run to end the game, 14 points, 13 boards, which is a career high, 4 blocks, 2 steals. You could argue it was a little garbage timey, but the Knicks made this a game, and Embiid is like prideful enough. And I think more importantly, spiteful enough that he's going to play his ass off, especially after Robinson blocked him once. And then Robinson just kept sunning him.
Yeah, it wasn't even, I don't even think it was garbage timing, because the reality of the situation was that the Knicks kept like just making it interesting enough, you know, keeping it within like that 9-10 point range, that the Sixers kept having to put their starters back in. When they kept trying to yank everybody, it would be like, oh, no, we can't do that. Like, the Knicks are still sticking in this, and they're still trying to do something. And particularly Mitch, like, he was awesome, man. I'm like running out of words, you know, to describe him. Is just tonight was just another one of those games where it was like it was exactly what you said. Initially, I was looking at it and I was like, okay, this is finally the game where he's going to come back to earth. Like, you know, he looked a little uncomfortable to start the game, at least by his standards. And I was like, all right, you know, I guess this is like the end of this magical run, at least for the moment. You know, the Sixers are so good. Joel Embiid is so good. And then he just erupted in that like third and fourth quarter stretch. And it was amazing to see, man. I loved it. I was like freaking out the whole time, and just led to, you know, many more fantastic Mitch Hyatt moments. My favorite though was probably the second block on Embiid, because you could tell that like Embiid got his pride hurt a little bit, probably the first time that Mitch blocked him. And so he busted out like literally every move that he had. He stood up at the top of the key, or stood up at the, you know, the 3-point line straight on, pump faked him, tried to get him off his feet. Mitch didn't jump. And then, which is a very encouraging development, by the way. And then, you know, Mitch tracks him towards the hoop, and B tries to like bring it to his body. And then he tries to do like a fake pass off to the left or whatever. Mitch was like totally unfazed. And then he goes just for like a little fadeaway jumper. I mean, a free jumper from Joel Embiid. The dude's like 7'1". You know, that's a pretty good amount of fade on that fadeaway. And Mitch still just blocked him. It was fantastic. I loved like every second of that whole second half that Mitch was playing. And he played probably the better part of the second half there. If I haven't looked at what his minutes were just for the second half yet, but he played quite a bit.
Yeah, I loved the just how confident he was going at Embiid. And you got that feeling where he was like he was locked in, and he rarely has shown emotion this season. I actually liked it. It was almost like a little like throwaway comment from Clyde. They were saying DeAndre Jordan has been encouraging him to be more vocal. And I was just thinking of, I can't remember if it's like it's a Key and Peele segment. It's some kind of comedy segment, but just Jordan, like basically giving him like yelling lessons and like teaching him how to like roar essentially after plays. That might've been a real thing that an NBA player said about another NBA player at some point. But I just love that concept. And I think you make such an astute point about him not jumping on that Embiid ball fake, because even earlier in the quarter, Mike Scott got him with a ball fake, and or might have been Tobias Harris, and got like right into the lane on him. And he even from that adapted. And I think if Embiid was, I think if he was being honest with himself, like the move would have been to just post Mitch up, and he's so much stronger than him and so much more built than him at this point. He could have just buried him underneath the basket. But that's kind of the beauty and also the downfall at points of Joel Embiid, is that he's so prideful, is that like he's like in his mind. And he also is like such a sense of the moment that he's like, okay, like this is MSG, and like this like second round pick just embarrassed me. Like I have to get him back. So instead of like just pounding him under the basket and shooting a jump hook that like Mitch, as good as he is, probably wouldn't be able to get to, he had to try to blow by him and dunk it. And Mitch just totally made him pay for it. And it was just such an awesome sequence.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I'm already out of gas here, cause I just came in so hot on this Mitch love, but I can't, it's impossible to say like how good he's been over the last five or so games for someone who looked so raw to start the season. Like, I guess that's the craziest part about this whole thing. And I might've mentioned this on the pod either yesterday with Drew or the other day with Schwinn, but like his rate of development is crazy. You know, the little things that you're picking up on that Mitch is doing, like game over game, is just insane. Like Clyde even made a point today of noticing that his free throw shooting has gotten better and his form has gotten better and he looks more confident in his free throw stroke. And he's like, yeah, he's clearly been practicing that. And I was like, you know what? I think you're right. Like amongst all other things, he's doing so amazing right now. Like he's even starting to, you know, show a little more consistency in his free throw form and things of that nature, which maybe, you know, once that gets nailed down, then you might be talking about Mitch being able to actually shoot the ball, which would be even more dangerous. And like, I can't even imagine what the ceiling would be for him if he ever learns to shoot the ball from even just from the elbow, like a la Amari Stoudemire or something like that, would just be insane.
Yeah. I think almost my favorite stat of the night with him was the fact that he only had two fouls, because there's no one better in the NBA at getting opposing centers in foul trouble than Joel Embiid. And especially given the fact that like against like a similar type of player, like last year, I remember I watched Embiid go up against Jared Allen like four or five times. And every time like Allen would just pick up two, three fouls immediately against Embiid. And the fact that for Robinson, that's been, I mean, really like his one kind of limiting factor throughout this season. And he was able to guard him and pick up those two blocks and only have two total fouls. And I know there were stretches where Boban was in there and he still only played 28 minutes. But all that being said, like that is just immensely encouraging to me. And I think his overall night could have been even better. I counted like at least two or three times where he was open on backdoor cuts where the Knicks point guards just missed him. And I just think of like how incredible Clint Capella is playing with two transcendent passers in Harden and Paul. Like even just this year, I feel like for not for a season, because he's not physically built for it yet, but for stretches, he could average 18, 20 points a game playing with Harden and Paul, even as undeveloped as he is right now. Like if he had that type of passer with him and guys that draw that type of attention from a defense, like I literally think he could be that guy today.
I mean, he's almost to the point where he's averaging, you know, over the last like five, six games, he's almost averaging 15 points anyway, you know, and that's on the Knicks. Like, I like that pretty much no matter who the ball handler is on the Knicks now, they have chemistry with Robinson because he's just like the easiest guy to get the ball when it comes to like being near the hoop. Like we saw it with Trier first. And I feel like maybe Trier like set the blueprint of like, hey guys, look, like if you just run a little pick and roll with him, throw it anywhere within 10 feet of the hoop, he's going to put it through for you, or at least like get a good attempt off. And I feel like maybe everybody started taking notes then, because now already you can see Dennis Smith has some chemistry with him with throwing him the lobs. Kadeem Allen has thrown him some lobs. Damian Dotson, of all guys, has thrown some lobs to him over the last few games. He just seems like the easiest guy possible to have out there as like a pick and roll partner. And it's pretty cool to see. I don't know. I enjoy watching him play, and I like watching everyone else play with him. And more importantly, like, in a season that's been so trying, especially now in the midst of like a franchise worst losing streak, I think it's cool to see that Mitch is a guy that seems to be having fun and seems to like bring happiness and fun out of his teammates too, just by all the ridiculous stuff that he's doing right now.
This sounds like a criticism, but I promise it isn't. I feel like Alonzo Trier's sole purpose on a basketball court is to accumulate as many stats in as many different categories as possible. I mean, and ideally, I think early in his career, those were points, because that's kind of what he knew how to do, and that's what he was comfortable with. But he almost, I think Mitchell Robinson, in a way, actually taught Alonzo Trier how to pass, because it kind of clicked in his mind, like, wait, like, whenever I pass it to this guy, like, I just automatically 100% of the time get an assist. And now it's encouraging, like, he threw like a nice look to Cornette in this game. I think it's actually made him a better passer, because it's like maybe the first time, I mean, obviously he played with DeAndre Ayton at U of A last year, but it's the first time in the NBA played with someone that was like, wait, I can get just as sure of a statistic this way as I can shooting the basketball. And I think it made him a different player. So I'll give Mitchell credit for just about anything at this point.
Yeah, seriously. He's just the man. I love Mitch Robinson. I will profess my love right now in front of all of the thousands and thousands of Locked On Knicks listeners. I love Mitchell Robinson.
Was he, quick question, because I missed the pod yesterday, was he number one in your power rankings?
He was number one on both of our power rankings, actually.
That's awesome. Yeah. I really love that. I was going to say, he like, over the last, like not even, like, obvious, like, in terms of love, like, he was maybe always there. But earlier in the season, we did a podcast on all-star probabilities for each Knicks player. And Kevin Knox was just so far ahead of everyone. Like, it was me and Jonathan Macri. And I think we both had, like, Knox, like, at around, like, 55% making an all-star game in his career. And we had Robinson at, like, 15 or 20 at most. And, like, in my mind, that's, like, almost, like no shots at Knox, but that's almost, like, flipped a little bit in my mind over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I'm still not ruling out the possibility of Kevin Knox turning into, like, an all-star caliber player. And I don't even necessarily, like, I think I could see a all-defensive first team and defensive player of the year type player out of Mitchell Robinson, maybe even before I see like an all-star out of him, because if Rudy Gobert is any proof of that, it's like, you know, defense isn't necessarily valued. Even if you're an elite, like, around the rim finisher and a good rebounder and a great shot blocker and average, you know, somewhere in the 15 to 20 points per game region, you know, it's no guarantee of making an all-star team. And I think that that's kind of what I expect from Mitch at this point. But like I was, to my point, you know, a minute ago, if he ever develops a jump shot, like, forget about it. He could be like a 10-time all-star. Like, because if you unlock that part of his game, everything else is already at 20 years old, after taking a year off between high school and the NBA to just train and not play college basketball, he already looks this good. Like, I can only imagine, you know, how incredibly filthy he would look if he develops a jump shot at some point in his career. But yeah, I would agree with you. Like, definitely based off what they've been showing lately, I could see an all-star appearance at least first in Mitchell Robinson's career before I would see it in Knox's career. And maybe Knox would develop a little later on, maybe even on his second contract.
Yeah, I guess the way I should have framed that is, I mean, that was just kind of the mechanism we used earlier in the season to rank Knicks assets, is in my power ranking of most valuable Knicks guys, I really do not want to give up in any trade for anyone. I think he's moved solidly to number one. But anyway,
oh, no doubt. Yeah, dude, like, if it came down to it and the Knicks were trying to trade for, like, you know, like, guys that we were discussing on the trade bag podcast, you know, last week, like Bradley Beal or Anthony Davis, whatever, like, I'm almost at this point willing to take Mitchell Robinson off the table in those discussions, because I want to see him on a team with good players, like, because I feel like he would be the one guy out of all the young guys the Knicks have right now that would flourish in that situation, like getting put on a team with like elite playmakers and elite scorers and stuff, and just being able to clean up the scraps and like block a ton of shots and, you know, catch lobs and run pick and roll and stuff. I mean, it would be amazing. I definitely want to keep it. Like, he's probably the most untouchable player on the team to me now.
Yeah, I'm almost a little worried because I feel like earlier in the season, like in the hypothetical scenario some people are speculating on, where like Kevin Durant comes to the Knicks and like the Knicks maybe end up not with the first pick, but with the second or third, and they could kind of put together a tenable package for Anthony Davis. Depending on what the Celtics ultimately decide to do, I think there would have been a scenario like 5 weeks back where you could have gotten away with not putting Robinson in, and he's almost playing too well where now like that's no longer a possibility, where like the Pelicans would be like, okay, if you want him, give us Mitchell Robinson. But I think we could go on forever and ever about him. We both love Mitch. We will forever love Mitch. It will be very difficult for him to do anything to dissuade us of that love. And I've said that about a lot of Knicks before, so hope I'm right. Anyways, we will wrap up this first segment. We'll come back. We'll talk about the rest of the bench next on Locked On Knicks.
Welcome back into Locked On Knicks. I am Alex Wolf. I've got Gavin Shaw here today. It's nice before he goes on his trip. I thought you were already on your trip. I apologize for that. I've been advertising that you're already on your trip already this week, but I guess you weren't quite yet.
It was a trip from this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. You're on a miniature sabbatical.
I'm on a staycation.
Anyway, before we jump in to the rest of the Knicks bench in this game, which was undoubtedly the star of the game, let me just ask a quick favor of our listeners here. The Locked On Podcast Network is currently running a survey, and we're trying to figure out what listeners like you like and don't like about the podcast. Surely you like everything about Locked On Knicks and have no complaints, but you can go on and say that, or, you know, if you have a complaint, I guess make that too. But, you know, just give us all the positive stuff. We got to look good. You know, we're new. But at any rate, you can go online right now, take about 10 to 15 minutes of your time, and get a chance at a $250 Vivid Seats gift card, which is a ticket marketplace where you can, you know, get some tickets to go see the Knicks. Like, I joked on yesterday's pod that $250 is maybe good enough for one seat in the 100 level. But, you know, it realistically, prices are down right now. You could probably get, like, probably two games worth for you and a friend out of this. So it's a pretty solid opportunity for 10, 15 minutes of your time. So we just need you to go to lockedonpodcast.com/survey to participate in that. And so that's lockedonpodcast.com/survey. Check that out. Fill out the survey. Let, you know, the bosses, the head honchos of Locked On Podcast, David Locke, all them, know what you're thinking so we can help make things better here. But definitely check that out for us. We would mucho appreciate that. Anyway. So to get back into the business at hand here, the Knicks bench, dude, was awesome. Like, the whole team kind of sucked today in general. Like, I guess I should say the whole team, the whole starting unit kind of sucked today. Knox was not very good. Dennis Smith was very meh. And Hezonja, predictably, was horrible. Vonleh continued to not be very good. DeAndre Jordan, like, was whatever, but... DeAndre Jordan's been like contributing enough, but I mean, when Mitchell Robinson is the alternative at center, like, there's no contest. Like, you want Mitchell Robinson out there, and DeAndre Jordan can ride the bench for all I care. But the other guys that came in off the bench, Damien Dotson, Kadeem Allen, and Alonzo Trier, I'd say in particular, and like with a minor shout out to Lance Thomas, who actually, he was 2 for 2 for 5 points, and he was a team-high plus 11 for the game. Not that plus-minus is a perfect stat, but Lance was definitely affecting things out there tonight. But mostly, I'd like to focus on Allen, Trier, and Dotson. Dotson had a stretch in the second quarter where he scored, I think it was 14 points just in that quarter, or it might have been in the whole first half, but he scored the better part of 14 points in the second quarter, which was great. And that kind of spurred the first Knicks comeback of the day. And then Allen and Trier also pitched in. All told, Dotson ended up with 16 points on 6 of 16 shooting because he kind of cooled down a little bit towards the end of the game. Kadeem Allen had 13 points on 5 of 11 and 4 assists and 3 steals. And Alonzo Trier had a team-high 19 points on 5 of 9 shooting, 3 of 4 from 3, 6 of 6 from the line, 4 rebounds, and 4 assists. So, I don't know. I just was curious on your thoughts on those three, Gavin, because I really thought that they came in and kind of set the tone. And for a lot of the time, they were playing together. And, like, they brought some defensive intensity. They were kind of, like, handing off ball handling responsibility between the three. Like, even Dotson got some weird, like, point Dotson, you know, attempts there for a little bit. Point but I thought they did a good job. I thought it was solid.
Yeah, I thought all three. It was honestly like it made for like I was if we weren't going to lead off with Mitchell Robinson, like I was just going to talk about like how much I genuinely enjoyed watching this game. Like the Knicks have lost 18 in a row. I don't get a lot of fun out of this all the time. Which I mean, on the scale of getting paid to talk about basketball, because once you're in that realm, not that we're getting paid very much, it's all fun more or less. But in that context, like this game was genuinely like super enjoyable. And I mean, obviously, Robinson was the headline of that in the second half. But in the first, it was because of those three, and particularly Trier and Dotson in the early going. I think they had combined about 22 points in their first 15 like cumulative minutes of action. In terms of real game time, it was only about like 6, 7, 8 minutes. Dotson was just like hitting some killer step backs in that first quarter, and then he had the buzzer beating three over Embiid, and like I couldn't help, like I gave like a little like fist bump from my couch. I was just kind of getting fired up. And then Dotson, I think, ended up missing about, because I think he started 6 for 7, so I'm pretty sure he missed his final 9 shots. Trier, I was so impressed. He carried it throughout. Like he was really, really good in the early going, what he typically does, just attacking in transition. But then in the second half, had that buzzer beating three to end the third. I mentioned it earlier, but had like an awesome no look bullet pass to Cornette for an easy lay in. He was in control and still aggressive simultaneously. And then Kadeem Allen, I think the best way I can sum it up about Kadeem Allen is like, you know how we were just talking about Mitchell Robinson? I would say if you were to like sum up my feelings about each player on the team, his and Robinson's are the only two that I'm purely positive about relative to expectations. And Robinson's is obviously much higher, but Allen is in that group.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Allen, like I've really been impressed with him since he's come up. I honestly didn't think that he was going to be like called up as soon as he was, but injuries sort of necessitated it with Frank and Moutier going down. But like Allen, I think is going to be like a rotation player for the rest of the season. What's unfortunate is I think that unless they send him back to the G League for a small stint, he's going to run out of eligibility like right before the end of the season. So he might not be able to see the season all the way through if they try to run him out like all the way because of the two-way contract rules. But I definitely want him up here as much time as he possibly can through the end of the season because he plays like just really heady. You know, he doesn't make any silly plays. He is surprisingly like adept at finding the open man, you know, off of like dribble drives or like little pick and roll situations, pick and pop, like when you can get it with like Cornette or something. But I've been really impressed like with his vision and stuff, which I guess I didn't really see from him back like in summer league and stuff like that when I had some exposure to him previously. So, you know, that's really good to see. And just in general, I've enjoyed watching him play. Like, it's kind of like, I hate to make this comparison, but like sort of the way that he's playing right now is the way that like I really wish that Frank Ntilikina would play sometimes, like not shooting just to shoot, but like shooting when it's time to shoot. You know what I mean? Like not forcing the issue, like just making the smart reads on plays. And Frank, I feel like Frank's idea of a smart read on any given play is finding a teammate for a basket. And when he tries to score, sometimes he kind of forces it. Like it doesn't seem like it's natural for him necessarily. Whereas Kadeem Allen isn't, he's not like a scorer, but he scores the ball when he knows it's time to score the ball, like if he has an opening and stuff. And I like that about him. I just like that he's a smart player. And you know, there's a chance that he's like just another Langston Galloway or what's another one of those like bench bros that came up from the G League, like Trey Burke even. I mean, you could make an argument, but like the style of play that he plays with, I mean, I guess it sort of reminds you of Langston Galloway in a weird way, but it, like better.
Similar energy.
Yeah, more energy. Like, and I hope he sticks around. Like, I hope I could legitimately see, like, even if the Knicks become this good team that we want them to become in the offseason, I could see him sticking on as the third or fourth guard on the team and maybe even getting some minutes.
Yeah, I'm in 100% agreement with you. He's just such a heady player. And I think the one qualifier I'll put on your Neil Aquina point, which I 100% agree with, is at the same age that Frank is now, Kadeem was playing junior college basketball, like not even D1. So I guess that's, I mean, if you want to look at a sign of encouragement for Frank, though some of that I do think is inherent. And I think he really cuts the core of it, saying like he shoots when he's supposed to shoot and he passes when he's supposed to. He lets the game dictate what he does versus Frank, where a lot of what he does on the basketball court feels very premeditated. And I just like the fact that Allen plays with a combination of both speed and actually has pretty solid touch around the bucket, or at least maybe it's he's playing over his head right now, and that'll come back down to earth. But it just such a solve from watching Moutier, Burke, and I mean, I hate to say it, but Frank all year, because he's just it's just so intuitive. While those guys, even when they're playing well, this is less true with Frank and more true with Moutier and Burke, but when they're playing well, they would kind of grind the offense to a halt, and it would kind of have to all center around them. And Dennis Smith Jr. is kind of a much better version of that player. But with Allen, like everything he gets is within the natural order of how the offense is flowing. And I think that's such an asset for an NBA player. And it's why you see guys like look at his counterpart tonight, another undrafted University of Arizona point guard, TJ McConnell, who I think a large part of the reason he's so successful and he's stuck in the NBA despite being like a 5'10 white dude who doesn't look all that athletic and isn't all that athletic is because they're able to be effective without taking anything off the table for anyone else. And to me, that defines why I like Kadeem Allen so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And hopefully we'll keep seeing more of him as the season goes on. And hopefully he doesn't fall out of the rotation once like Frank and in particular Moutier comes back. I've kind of reached the point where I'm like over the Moutier experience at this point in the year. Like if I have to see like Moutier and Dennis Smith playing a whole bunch every single game, I'm not going to be a happy camper, because they essentially bring the same exact thing to the table, but Dennis Smith does it better than Moutier. So I'd rather just see Dennis Smith now and no more Moutier. And I don't have faith in that happening, because I know that Fizdale loves him. But anyway, just to get back real quick to Trier, I wanted to shout him out because I felt like this was probably his best game that he's had in a while. I mean, he's had his ups and downs lately. But I just think that in this game in particular, he was being like good Alonzo Trier. You know what I mean? Like he was decisive. He wasn't chucking, which is like the biggest thing for him. Like he was taking like spot up shots, which, you know, I was advocating for like a month ago on here, like that he should be looking more to like find his spots and take like spot up three pointers and stuff like that. He took a couple of those. He made, you know, one or two of those, which was good to see. Just made good decisions all around, made good passes. I don't know. I enjoyed watching him play ball. And he's a guy that I regularly don't enjoy watching play if he's kind of having one of his bad habit nights. But tonight was definitely like a good habit night for Trier, and hopefully more of what we see from him going forward. Although I think he kind of took advantage of the fact that like the Sixers didn't necessarily have the perfect guy to defend him most of the night, which certainly helped him out. And I guess we'll see like how he does going forward against like better perimeter defenders and stuff. But I all in all, I was encouraged by how he played.
Yeah, he was, again, it was actually like, it was almost like he took something out of Allen's book, where he didn't really force anything tonight. And that was such a relief. And I think that allowed him to maintain a high level of efficiency. And I genuinely enjoy when him and Allen are both on the court together, because I think I mentioned when Allen first came up, like I called like three or four different University of Arizona games that year going to Arizona State when those two shared a backcourt in 16-17. So it's both nostalgic for me, and I think it's genuinely mutually beneficial for those two. There were a couple of plays, and I think you mentioned it, Alex, like just how like natural it was that they were sort of trading off ball handling duties, and the ability of both those two guys to kind of get out of each other's way. And you never feel like there's any frustration on either side, because they're clearly, or at least I would assume, they're pretty good friends, and they clearly know each other's game at a really high level. But I think with that, we should wrap up this second segment, come back one final time, and we'll give you some thoughts on the starters, which weirdly, we haven't talked about any of them yet, because they mostly sucked. So we'll finish with that and your favorite segment, Overtime, coming up next on Locked On Knicks. Welcome back into Locked On Knicks, third and final segment. Gavin Shaw and Alex Wolf with you. He mentioned it earlier, but I want to mention it again because I so appreciate him picking up the slack due to my tomfoolery. Alex put out two great podcasts earlier this week, one with our guy Schwinny Poo. If you want more Mitchell Robinson love, that one, I am to understand, is chock full of it. And it brought about a genuinely strange Twitter interaction with our former host, James Marceda, in which I believe he talks about wearing Alex's skin. So if you want to see what inspired that, listen to that podcast. And then check out yesterday's episode where, Alex, let me know if it was Drew Steele, right, you were with?
Mm-hmm. Scoot Toots, baby. Mr.
Yeah,
Toots.
I don't know him at all, but I get a little chuckle out of his Twitter handle, even though I don't get it every time I see it.
I actually don't get it either, but I don't even know if he gets it, to be totally honest. I think he just thought it would be funny.
If I'm ever on with him, I'll ask the question. But you guys power ranked your favorite Knicks, and I think at a time of the season where the team has lost, to put it nicely, 18 games in a row, that is a great topic and one that people are certainly interested in. So if you missed either of those two, highly recommend you check them out. All right.
I got to say real quick before we get in, just a note on Schwinn's episode. He was definitely slosh when we recorded that episode. Okay. And I was totally nice to him through the episode and tried not to like acknowledge it. But now I can totally acknowledge it, because I know that he's like fine with being self-deprecating about it. And like also like, you know, nobody can blame him, because like watching the Knicks makes me want to drink too. So it was very funny though. Like if you want to hear Schwinn go on a kind of semi-drunken rant about Danny Ainge and how Danny Ainge is an idiot for passing on Mitchell Robinson, it's right at the end of the second segment, and it's pretty beautiful.
He doesn't think Robert Time Lord Williams is going to be better than him. Oh wait, no, is it Rob Williams? What's his last name?
Yeah, Robert Williams. Yeah.
Oh, is it? Okay, yeah.
The fact you can't even remember his last name tells you all you need to know about him versus Mitchell Robinson, though.
Yeah, I know his nickname is the Time Lord, which is just an incredible nickname.
Because he can't ever wake up on time.
Yeah, that's a small part of it. All right, let's get into it. Talk about the starters. It was largely a frustrating night. Like I do appreciate that Fizdale, like when he saw right off the bat that Hizonia didn't have this, and he did this with Vonleh a couple games back. He just pulled him for the rest of the game. And then speaking of which, he saw that Vonleh didn't have it in the first half. And then Vonleh, even though Luke Kornet kind of sucked too, at least he was kind of theoretically giving some floor spacing. I like that he pulled Vonleh when Vonleh wasn't bringing anything to the table. And then kind of a frustrating night from Dennis Smith, Kevin Knox, DeAndre Jordan somehow had 7 assists, but it still sort of felt like he was playing in neutral the whole game. Did any of those guys like stand out to you? And I can only presume a negative way, or maybe you found some positives.
Well, can we just like for one moment point out that this is like the stupidest fucking lineup that Fizdale has put out all year? Like, I saw this lineup and I was like, what is he thinking? Really? And I tweeted on the posting and toasting handle that like, he even sort of foreshadowed this earlier in the season. He was talking about Porzingis, you know, obviously, but he said something to the effect of like, he didn't mention who the point guard would be in this like lineup. I would assume Frank, I guess. And he was like, oh, you know, I envision Porzingis as a starting small forward, and we could play Kornet and Robinson out there with him. And we could play Kevin Knox at the two. And everybody was like, are you fucking nuts? Like, that's, not a lineup that you play. And then lo and behold, tonight he cashed in. He cashed in that Kevin Knox the two chip. He he just plopped his balls on the table and said, like, I'm doing this. I am playing Kevin Knox at the two. It's gonna happen. I don't care how ugly it is. And it was ugly. It was horrible. I mean, Kevin Knox predictably got in foul trouble in the first 3 minutes of the game, because what other result would happen, when he's being forced to guard two guards and stuff? Like, that's not something that he can do. He could barely keep up with threes. And I mean, I love Kevin Knox, and I hope that he can develop into at least a league average defensive player, but it's not going to happen at the two guard position. Like, someone was tweeting at me today and was like, yeah, but it's good to have him try something new. No, not that. It's not good to have Kevin Knox try to be a two guard, because it's not something that he could ever realistically be good at. Like, he doesn't have the lateral quickness. He doesn't have he's not even the right size for it. You know what I mean? Like, and you have weird anomalies like Ben Simmons, who's a 6'10" point guard, but Kevin Knox is not built to be a shooting guard, and he doesn't have the foot speed. He doesn't have the skill set for it. It's not a good fit at all. So I did not like that. The lineup, first off, David Fizdale gets the first, he gets 4.5 out of 5 poop emojis tonight for that lineup, because it was really terrible. But then beyond that, DeAndre Jordan, I thought, had kind of an interesting first half before, he kind of sat most of the second half in favor of Mitch, which was a welcome change. But those 7 assists weren't fluky. It was really strange. They were running, I don't know, I guess I'm not the best X's and O's guy in the world, but I would assume that it's kind of triangle-esque, where they were giving it to DeAndre up on the elbow, and then guys were cutting, and he was hitting, cutters. He hit Smith on 1 or 2. He hit Knox on 1. I forget who else he passed it to, but I mean, he was hitting a lot of cutters. It was kind of neat to see, but other than that, his game was mostly unremarkable. Everybody else just kind of sucked. Kevin Knox really just needs the freaking all-star break. I mean, the crazy part is he shot 4-10, which isn't even that bad for him. And it just felt like a really horrible game for him. I didn't enjoy watching him play at all today. It just wasn't one of his good days.
Yeah, I will say, firstly, in not in defense of the lineup, but here's the rationale, which was incorrect. It's that the Sixers with Tobias Harris now present a size matchup that you almost never ever see in the NBA. Because really, Redick is kind of the only quote unquote hiding spot for a smaller guy. Butler 6'7", Simmons is 6'10", and Embiid 7'1", Harris somewhere between 6'6" and 6'8". But the idea that your best case scenario is to distort your own team and play just guys totally out of position to try and match up with that, versus saying we're going to give up some stuff defensively, but we're going to be scrappy, we're going to get in your ass, and then offensively you're going to have to chase us around, we're going to tire out your big guys, which is what actually worked for the Knicks on the night. And you look up and down the bench, outside of Dotson, every single guy has a positive plus minus, and the only reason Dotson doesn't is because he got dragged down by playing so many minutes with those bum ass starters in this game and that stupid lineup. Because outside of that, he was very solid. And for Kevin Knox, I'm in total agreement. That was torture. I did not have a good time watching him tonight. I think I wrote down, I don't even know if I want to read them. I wrote down on my notes just a bunch of mean stuff about Kevin Knox. He was just it was just another one of those games where he's just absent. And if he's not hitting shots, he's just not making any kind of impact. And he's had little plays and moments over the last couple of games that are to the contrary of that, that got me really excited. But it just has to be more sustained from him, that he can find a way to impact an NBA game when he's not shooting the ball well. Because right now he's not shooting the ball well very often at all. It's like once out of every 4 or 5 games. I will give him a little credit. He did have that awesome dunk where he kind of ended Ben Simmons' life. And that was, I need more of that out of him. I need more of that energy. I don't know if you listened to Alex, but I was talking about this a little bit on the solo pod. My premise for Kevin Knox, and not that they're necessarily similar players, but both wings with high expectations who have a tendency to go quiet sometimes. I want to see as little Andrew Wiggins-y qualities from him as possible. And in my mind, this was a very Andrew Wiggins-y game. Do nothing 95% of the game. Have one awesome dunk. Have one nice layup at the end. Miss a couple of threes and call it a night.
Yeah, it was Like, there were definitely moments from Knox that I liked during this game. It was just overall it might have had something to do with he had 5 fouls in this game too. So sometimes, and he only played, 19 minutes, which actually is a good thing. Like, maybe it's a good thing he got in foul trouble, because like when if he didn't get in foul trouble, he still probably would have played 40 minutes again or whatever. And, Fizdale would have continued to run the tread off his tires. But like, I just think he had a couple of shining moments. Actually, the first thing in the game, he found DeAndre Jordan for what could have been 2 points. It wound up just being free throws, so he didn't get the assist. But like, he ran kind of a little pick play with DeAndre Jordan. I was like, okay, that's a good look. That was nice. And then, like you said, he had the dunk, which was, it was a great dunk. It was probably top three dunk of the year for the Knicks so far. He just like absolutely annihilated Ben Simmons, like took him off his feet. Ben Simmons might have done like a backwards somersault when he hit the ground or something, landed on his back like a turtle and couldn't get up for 5 minutes. I don't know, something along those lines, because he like ended his life. It was pretty fantastic. And then, like you said, he hit a layup. I made a note that he used a pick pretty nicely in the, I think with DeAndre Jordan again, used a pick pretty nicely and sort of like hedged off the pick and then took a nice open 3-pointer. And made that. So, he had his flashes, but when he didn't have his flashes, it just wasn't a good night for him. And I think that Fizdale in particular set him up for failure tonight by starting him as the two guard, which I think screwed with his rhythm, like right from the opening tip. And then he just never quite found it after that, I guess, because, that started his descent into foul trouble. But whatever. I'm just looking for, like, let's get tonight's game. We're recording, before Thursday, but whatever. Let's get tonight's game out of the way. Like, get to the All-Star break. He can do his Rising Stars Challenge. He was the last man added to that, so he'll probably play, like, 10 minutes or something. Like, nothing crazy. He's apparently going to UK over the weekend to watch the Kentucky game against, like, Tennessee or whatever. So let him have fun with that. But then otherwise, like, I just want his ass on a couch for like a week, do his regular like, cardio or whatever. But I need him like fresh for post All-Star break, because he really just looks, the biggest thing to me right now is he just looks tired. Like, he just looks like he really, really needs a break. And tonight sort of in a way gave it to him, but he needs like a legit, like, don't step foot on a basketball court for a couple days break, I think.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement with you, and I think we'll see a guy closer to what we saw over the first 25-30 games of the season, or maybe even might have been 20-40 where he really got hot. But I think that guy will come back down the stretch, and I think all it requires is a little bit of a break. Speaking of which, I have to get on a plane in about 7 hours, so if you're all right with it, Alex, unless you have any final thoughts, I thought we could head into our closing segment of overtime.
Yeah, let's overtime it up. Let's do it.
Okay, cool. All right. Okay. I think we have to start off with the incredible Joel Embiid jumping into the crowd. And if I remember correctly, it was he like almost like if he was slightly less athletic, he would have taken off. I think it was Regina King's head who was sitting courtside, and they showed the replay, and he literally like his like the tip of like his like Nike like scrapes her head on the way over. And as it was, like he almost murdered the Knicks stat guy, it was great because I really just from a play-by-play man's perspective, I really loved it from Mike Breen because he's literally like helping Embiid up and like still like describing the actions like Embiid struggling to get up and he like totally like took himself out of it, which like amazed me because like I would be like cursing up a storm if Joel Embiid like jumped and like killed my stat guy right next to me. And then Breen just kind of pauses for like 20 seconds after, and then he's like, "I'm glad to say that Dave Fried is still alive." And I don't know why, it just really got me. I was on the floor like laughing for like a minute or two, and he couldn't stop talking about it with Clyde for a few minutes after, and like he had something else where he's like, "Dave Fried will be outside of Madison Square Garden signing autographs after the game." And I just thought it was awesome. I thought it was vintage Breen, and it was just an insane moment. And it made what was already a fun game, it kind of took up the insanity up another level.
Well, first off, two things that I have to add with that point. First off, like, credit to Stat Guy for still being alive. I'm sure that Joel Embiid sort of like pulled himself back a little bit, but the way that Embiid hit him reminded me of, do you remember like the iconic Antonio Brown like ninja kick on the Cleveland Browns corner, like from the football game? where he like, I think it was either on a punt return or like he caught it or whatever, but he like straight up like jumped up and like kicked the dude in his chest plate and just like jumped over him. And it was a massive flag and he definitely got flagged for it. But like, that's kind of how Embiid landed on the stats guy. And I was like, damn, like good for him for getting right back up. He definitely looked a little rattled and had to check, make sure his glasses weren't broken and stuff, but he was in good shape. He had a post game interview with Rebecca Harlow and all that. So that was good. But then the second part, the scary part was that right after it happened, you couldn't really see who he had run into. And there was a couple seconds there where Clyde didn't speak. And you almost thought that Joel Embiid just murdered Clyde. And if that had happened, I would have been devastated along with everybody else.
that would have been a horrible way to go. But yeah, I didn't think that because I thought whenever they're on camera, I'm always looking and like, I thought I knew that it was on the other side, but that would have really, I think Joel Embiid, he would have just never been able to come back to MSG again. I think that would
have been. Joel Embiid should have just retired if that was the case. If someone kills Clyde for going for a stupid loose ball, for something as stupid as that, like they should be forced to retire from basketball. We're establishing that as a new rule. I'm sending it to the league office right now.
I'm with it. And that's a good transition because another one of my OT segment, I'm sure Breen has mentioned this in some Knicks broadcast in the past, but I had no idea that Clyde throughout a 10 plus year career never had a technical foul. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Oh, that's come up plenty of times. Honestly, I've heard that a lot. I feel like I've heard that probably at least 20 times over the last like 5 years. That comes up fairly. It usually would come up like in a game where the Knicks are facing like Dwight Howard or DeMarcus Cousins or something like that. Yeah. Draymond, someone who's very technical foul prone. And Breen is always the one to bring it up, though. Clyde never brings it up. And then Clyde always just kind of does this humble little like, oh, yeah. You know, and that's it. Like he's never one to like pat himself on the back, but yeah, Breen likes to bring that up. I think that's part of why he admires Clyde. It's just that Clyde was a very, very cool customer. Never lost his cool, you know, on the court or off the court. So, I'll lead into mine though, because my OT thing is a Breen and Clyde interaction as well, and I just love the comedy between these two guys. So it was Rebecca Harlow was like doing a little segment about talking about Tobias Harris. And she said that players on the Sixers have taken to calling him a Bond guy, which is not like a word I've ever really heard of. It obviously harkens to like glue guy, but apparently it's because he likes to like form bonds with all of his teammates, you know,
well,
like
I assumed he was into bondage, but yeah. It couldn't
of those yes.
He's not a Bond guy. It's like, why do you know that, Joel? You know, he meant
Tobias Harris, noted BDSM enthusiast.
That's what the Toby Bobby show is all about.
But anyways, oh God, that's terrible. But so yeah, he's apparently like been trying to get to know all of his new Sixer teammates and get more comfortable with them and stuff. And so he's like trying to form bonds with them. And so Breen, like, after a few seconds of silence after Rebecca got off, he's like, I thought a Bond guy was someone that was in the James Bond movies. No? No? Okay, I'm trying humor here, Clyde. I'm doing my best. And then Clyde goes, I thought it was the Autobahn. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, where did that even go? I just thought it was hilarious. That was my laughing moment of the broadcast.
All right, one final one from Clyde, and then we'll close this extended bondage-oriented edition of Overtime. I loved when, like, Ben Simmons was just, like, about to, like, he was actually, he almost pulled an Embiid before Embiid. Like, it was a great little, like, preview of it. Because he was, like, running, and his momentum was going to take him out of bounds, and Brett Brown was right there, and Brett Brown just catches him in this, like, great bear hug. And I, like, it was kind of, like, a funny, it was almost, like, a little bit of a sweet moment. Like, I know, like, Brown, like, coached, like, Simmons' dad, so I would assume they have a pretty close relationship. And Clyde just has this little, like, wry, like, ah, a little precursor to Valentine's Day, folks. It's just such a Clyde moment. It, like, really, like, it, like, if you had, like, concentrated Clyde in one line, like, that would be it. So I thought that was great.
I love Clyde to death. I'm glad that he seems to have, maybe like with how fun that Mitch has been and that Mitch has been bringing like some joy to the game, I feel like Clyde has finally like found his joy again over these last few games and has been like cracking jokes again and hasn't been like grumpy Clyde like he was for a while.
You see, I think he's delirious. I think it's like he's been in the desert for like 2 months now and nobody's giving him any water, and they just keep losing, and he's slowly, it's rotating back that it's so bad that it's funny, but it could be the Robinson thing too. All right. Anyways, with that, we went a lot longer than anticipated, but this was one of my favorite episodes we've ever done. I had a lot of fun. So we'll call it a podcast, and I will be back on Sunday. I can't remember if the Knicks have a game that day, so I don't know what I'm going to be talking about, but I'll be doing a podcast.
No game, because it's All-Star. That's the All-Star game.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. I'll have to maybe not on Sunday. I'll be back at some time. Alex, I presume, will again continue to carry this podcast on his back and do something later this week, and then we'll give you a break for All-Star. Enjoy it, have fun. Talk to you soon.